Ballistic missiles. She nodded grimly. Nice choice, isn't it? San Francisco, the Cow Palace.
Wow, it's big,
said Denise, as she and her sister and mother followed the crowd streaming from the BART station to the Cow Palace's main entrance. The rain had slowed to a drizzle, but still their hair was wet and plastered on their scalps by the time they got into the huge auditorium. Once inside the vast barn-like stadium, Sylvia told her daughters,
"They've held national conventions in here. Rodeos, basketball games, hockey games, even roller derbies."
"Roller derbies?"
Vicky asked, curious despite her practiced teenage boredom.
"What's that?"
Sylvia explained as they climbed the concrete stairs and found their seats. From this high up, the platform on which the president would speak looked little bigger than a postage stamp.
"You said we were going to be in the front row," Vicky accused.
"We're not that far away," said Sylvia as they sat down.
"They've set up big TV screens," Denise said, pointing.
"We'll be able to see the president's face very clearly," Sylvia said.
"Just like we're sitting next to him, almost."
Vicky muttered,
"Big deal."
Sylvia pretended not to hear her. As the limousine pulled up at the Cow Palace, the president asked his chief of staff, "What's happening in Korea?" Norman Foster pulled the phone butt out of his ear. "Looks like they're getting ready to launch those other two birds." "We can see them. Satellite imagery from the National Reconnaissance Office." The Secret Service agent pulled the door open on the president's side of the limo. The cortege had driven directly into the Cow Palace's underground parking area, which had been cleared for security. No cheering crowds, no band playing Hail to the Chief, just a shadowy concrete expanse, chilly, damp. Before the president could get out of the limo, the chief of his Secret Service detail, a tall, lanky man with a weather-beaten face and a dour expression, ducked his head into the open door and said, "Mr. President, we've got to head back to the airport, sir." "No, we don't," the president said, smiling pleasantly at the agent's grimly determined face. "Sir, it's my duty. I make the decisions, Ron. I'm going ahead with my speech." The black-suited agent looked as if he wanted to argue the point, but he recognized the steel behind the president's smile. "You're the boss, sir." "That's right, Ron," said the president. As he got out of the limo, he asked his chief of staff, "What about that laser plane?" Sliding across the leather bench, Foster replied, "Approaching the North Korean coast. Should be in position to shoot at the missiles as soon as they're launched." "If it can get close enough to them," the president muttered. "Yep," said Foster. "There is that." The president nodded. Foster slid out of the limo and straightened up slowly. Arthritis, the president knew. The chief of staff made a small involuntary groan as he stood up. Then, "The Aegis ships are alerted and ready. So are the ABM bases in Alaska and Vandenberg." With another nod, the president muttered, "And now we'll see if we've spent the taxpayers' money wisely." "You bet your life," said Foster, without a trace of a smile. Able 1, Beam Management Compartment. "They're going to launch any minute," Harry prodded. Monk Delaney shot a sour glance over his burly shoulder. I'm ready. Let them launch." Bending over the seated Delaney, Harry saw that the ranging laser's screen was clear. Nothing in view. "Did I hear one of those blue suitors say we got fighters coming after us?" Delaney had his headphones solidly clamped to one ear. Obviously, he'd been tuned in to the intercom chatter.